Banks Radio Sport.
First to my only one domestic rugby match this weekend, but I'm guessing many of you listening to Friday Sport this evening will be taking a keen interest in the small matter that is the World Cup final in Japan tomorrow morning. It's England against South Africa for the Webb Ellis Cup. We'll be trying to get you in the mood for that match this evening, and we've got the usual suspects in the studio to talk football and hockey too. Welcome to Friday Sport on Manx Radio. Well, good evening. Welcome along to Friday Sport. We're talking football, rugby and hockey as usual on the programme this evening. We start tonight with football. Tony Meppham joins us on the line from Belfast. Tell us where you are and what you're doing, Tony.
I'm in Belfast. We've come over to watch the rugby, Chris, and also to celebrate Roger Chadwick, who sponsors St John's Football Club's 60th birthday. So weekend away, but we're keeping in contact with what's going on in the Isle of Man, and with only just leaving at lunchtime, the weather's not looking too good, and already we've lost a game tonight.
Yeah, many happy returns. We have indeed lost a game tonight. It comes in JCK Limited Combination 2, St John's against Malou. It seems to be a bit cursed at the moment, Malina Cloy, doesn't it, Tony?
Well, it does. I've been speaking to one or two of the guys involved with the pitch today, and it's just the way it's gone, and it happened a couple of years ago where we seemed to be dry during the week, and then sort of Thursday night, Friday morning, the heavens would open and cause a problem to the pitches. And it's just the top-up process at the moment, Chris, because the pitches are quite wet. So when we do get a bit of dry weather through, it starts to sort of cure it a bit. But then suddenly, like we have this morning, those real sort of heavy showers, and it causes a problem. And I know it's still a game of football. It's a combination game, so it's not too much of a panic for fixtures. But certainly, I'm looking at what's coming in maybe tonight and tomorrow, and I'm starting to get a little bit worried about the Railway Cup now, because when you look at clubs like Corinthians, after this weekend, we'll still have only played four games, and with the halfway stage of the season due at the end of the month, and not too many rearranged dates, then we're starting to stare a bit of a major problem in front of us. But hopefully the weather will play ball, and we'll get the fixtures played that have a meaning to the Railway Cup.
Well, it's not looking too nice out there at the moment, I do have to say that. Hope it's nicer where you are. Let's talk about the Canada Life Premier League. Will St George's be top of the table come tomorrow tea time, Tony? They've got Peel tomorrow, who lost 5-1 to the current leaders, St Mary's. Mary's only on the top on goal difference, and the games don't get any easier for them as they try and overcome what's been a faltering start to the campaign. Peel against St George's tomorrow, Tony. This is a big game as ever.
It's a huge game for St George's and Peel. And when I look at sort of Peel, big defeat last week, as you rightly say, that one against St Mary's. And then the draw against Laxey and Rushen has cost them dearly points-wise. They're a good team. And at the moment, with one or two players being injured, one or two players not being available, it's sort of causing a bit of a selection problem for Steve Faulkner. But hopefully they can get it right against St George's for their sake more than anything. But when you look at St George's, and I was impressed with them last week, a lot of good young players in there. Yes, Jacob Crook will be missing because he's playing for the Junior Ireland. No Furu Davies last week. But, you know, Connor Hislop, I thought, had a great game last week, and his goals are going to prove important for them. And also, when you look at the three, I think, really star young players that they have in Joe Quayle, Joe Ibanez and Jay Skelcher-Maxwell, then it points to me possibly to a St George's victory here, but it depends what sort of side Peel have out, Chris.
Well, they've taken maximum points so far, 15 from their matches so far. Can they make it 6 wins in succession tomorrow? They're away at Douglas Road. St Mary's, they're going very well as well. They're away also tomorrow, facing the Canada Life Premier League's surprise package, I think you'll call them, in Laxey. And St Mary's only conceded 4 goals all season, but they have lost a match, so they're not infallible.
No, they're not, and you're right in what you're saying. What a fantastic start for Laxey. This is top against third. Now, sort of 6 weeks ago, would you have said Laxey would be in third position after playing, what, 6-7 games? No, you wouldn't, and St Mary's put in a real good performance last week. I looked at the team sheet. You can see why it happened for them. People like Sam Gelling in there, Adam Adebayi, Dan Hattersley is lethal in front of errors in there. He caused all sorts of problems last week, and Connor Birch played well at that left-back spot for St Mary's. But Laxey, you know, been some really good performances in there. And with a smaller pitch, I think it might help them. St George's and Corinthians are coming up in the next 2 to 3 weeks, so that'll give us an indication how strong they are. But they've already done it against Peel. They played well against Flushing. And with young players in there, Mason Henwood, you've got Jack Ryden, Aaron Bradley. At the moment, it's going ever so well for Laxey, and fair play to Johnny Palmer and everyone else involved. It's all clicking together, and against the Marys, they'll be hoping to make it difficult for them.
They're the two biggest games, you'd say, in the top flight of Manx football tomorrow. Laxey against St Mary's and Peel against St George's. Remember, all the matches in the top flight have been moved back to 2 o'clock kickoffs after the clock went back on Sunday. That's the 27th of October. There are a couple of matches which are still kicking off at 2:30 this weekend. They come in Canada Live combination one. St Mary's against Laxey at the Bowl is 2:30 kickoff, as is Governors against Braddon in JCK Limited combination two. Elsewhere in the top flight, though, Moraine against Old Boys tomorrow, Tony. And Moraine, after picking up their first points of the season in emphatic style, you'd say, last week, it came late against Paul Rose, but they got the job done in the end.
Yeah, it doesn't matter when how late they come, as long as you get the points. And Nathan Draper, a multi-talented sportsman, came off the bench, I think it was, and scored that all-important goal. And I think Moraine can breathe a sigh of relief, because I think the way the league is panning out, with sort of Castletown already relegated, then you're looking at the other teams. And if you can take maximum points off one of those teams around you, then I think you're in with a chance. And when you look at sort of players that they've got their form around, young players who are now sort of developing on a Saturday afternoon with every game, Connor Gilbert, Alex McQuarrie with his goals. And then you've got other people like Harry Barton, Lewis Brew, and as we say, the winner of the game last week, Nathan Draper. Then hopefully David Brew can turn things around for Moraine. But Douglas High School Old Boys are a pretty good side. They're still not as strong as they were over the last couple of years, but certainly in the games that I've watched them so far this year, they're improving each time. And if Liam Buckley can get the best out of the team, then they can cause a problem for Moraine. And I think they will. I just think Old Boys Nowley will win this game.
You'd think, though, if Moraine are hoping to get points from teams in and around that final relegation spot, that Old Boys may just provide a chance for them to get some more points on the board after their first three that they registered last week with a win away at Paul Rose. Elsewhere, the final match in the top flight, Tony, Rushen, who have firm hopes of a Railway Cup finish against Douglas Athletic. Is your money on the home side?
Yeah, I think it is. You're right in your assumption on it. The Railway Cup qualification is the one that they're after. A big loss for them will be Adam Kuhl, who will be away representing the Ireland under-18s. A good luck to them as well on Sunday. But, you know, good performances over recent weeks are people like Adam Kinley, Alex Guy, Kyle Lunn. Mike Williams, it'd be interesting to see how he's recovered from that knock he took last week. But a new player to me and a new name, Greg Norris it was, who played for Rushen in centre midfield. One of his efforts, he really rattled the bar, and he looks a good player. And if they've got him for a few games, I think he's over from America at the moment, and then they would stand, I think, a really good chance of beating Athletic. But Athletic, with people like Lee Kane, Lee Ford scoring goals, and okay, last week they lost 3-2 to Douglas Royal, but I don't think it's panic stations for them. I think Douglas Athletic will pick up the points during the season to keep them in the Premier League. And with players like James Eyre, Martin Cowan, Stephen Cowan, and Adam Kinvig, I believe, was unbelievable last week in goal for Douglas Athletic. It sort of looks good. And Rhys Lake as well, who's a good young player. Athletic will make it difficult, but I think Liam Cowan's team are on a bit of a run and they'll win the game.
Tony Meppham, live from Belfast, thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend. We'll hear more from you in Classified tomorrow, which returns from 5 o'clock until 6 o'clock on AM 1368, online and on our smartphone apps as well. So just a reminder, Saturday Sport Classified back on from 5 o'clock tomorrow. Let's talk hockey now with Sam Spooner.
Manx Radio Sport.
And we will begin in the hockey this evening by looking at Rossborough Mixed Division 3, because there is a chance, a slim one, that Vikings D could win the title tomorrow. They play Ramsey Rookies, and Vikings D going very, very well indeed. Won all six matches they've played this season and only conceded two goals in the process. Sam Spooner.
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one, really, because it kind of relies on their own Vikings Colts team losing to Valkyries D. And it also relies on Castan Southerners losing to Backers D. Both of those are unlikely, but not impossible. But one thing Vikings D have got in their favour is that they're playing Rookies, the only other side that can catch them in the league. So if Vikings D win, that's a massive step forward for them in terms of their title ambitions. And the Colts playing Valkyries D, I think it'll be a tough game for the Colts, but Vikings Colts have already proven this year that they can punch well above their weight. They're very capable, and those guys and those teams are going to be looking to travel through to the C team and the B team in the coming seasons.
It's not just at the back where Vikings D have been very good, it's also at the other end of the field as well. 51 goals scored, that's 30 more than any other team in the league. So it doesn't take a genius to work out why they're doing so well this year.
Yeah, goals have been easy to come by for them this year. Lion's share of them have come from Ashley Osborne and Andrew Harding, both players that are, you know, in the twilight of their career, should we say, but still very, very well capable players. The form of Vikings D has been very, very good this season. Teams have tried and tried and tried, but Vikings D seem to be able to get big results every week. And I can't see that stopping anytime soon.
Some big players in that Vikings D side. They could win the league tomorrow. You think even if they don't win it tomorrow, they still stand very good chance of lifting that trophy come the end of the season. Turning our attentions, though, to the Rossborough Mixed Premier League. And one of the key games of the day, you would say, also involves Vikings in the top flight. Vikings A against Valkyries A. I say that because Valkyries A, they can pack a punch. They're a force to be reckoned with when they're on their A game. They play a Vikings A side who currently trail Backers A by 3 points in that title race. It's already an uphill struggle for Vikings. They have to get a win tomorrow, surely. Otherwise, it's curtains for their title chase this season.
Up until the Vikings A Backers A game, you'd have said Vikings A are well out of it. They haven't got a chance. You know, there's going to be some more surprises against Vikings A this season. But they played very well in that Backers A game, and they followed that up with a very good 5-0 win against Ramsey A. So I think Vikings A still go into this game as favourites, but if you look at the last result, it was 1-0 to Vikings. By the skin of their teeth, they come away with that victory. And Valkyries ran them all the way throughout the whole game. And it's been a sort of a tale of their season so far, is that Valkyries have just held a team up until the final 15, 20 minutes, and then it just kind of concentration slips. The opposition sort of ups it a gear and sort of really goes for it. And I think if Valkyries can hold that concentration for the last 10, 15 minutes of the game, they stand a real chance of causing an upset against Vikings A here. If Valkyries A can get a win against Vikings A and Vikings B can get a win against Ramsey A, the Vikings A are in danger of actually sitting in third place behind their B team. So Vikings A are going to be going out all guns blazing this weekend. So it could be, although there could be an upset on the cards, you've got to say the Vikings are nailed on favourites for that, and it's going to be a real juicy fixture.
Well, if ifs and buts were chips and putts, as my old man would say, Rossborough Mixed Premier League also sees Castletown Celts against Backers A. That's bottom against the top team. And Celts with only one win all season, but that did come against Vikings A. So Backers A can't let their guard down for 1 second, can they?
They can't let their guard down for 1 second, but yeah, I can't see any way that Celts are going to win that game, unfortunately. It's just the fact that Celts haven't got the personnel in their squad that they possibly have done in previous seasons. But saying that, when you see them beating Vikings A, they've got the determination and the desire to win a game like that. And if all the stars align, then yes, they could beat Backers A. But that's going to take a lot of stars to align at the same time.
Sam Spooner, thank you very much. We'll speak to you in the Classified tomorrow. Just a reminder of those top flight fixtures. Castletown Celts against Bacchus A. It's Ramsey A against Vikings B and Vikings A against Valkyries A in the top flight. Plus, keep an eye out for that Ramsey Rookies against Vikings D match as well, because Vikings D could, even though it's a slim chance, win that league tomorrow very early on. Only 7 games played after tomorrow, so what a fantastic achievement that would be. Talking of fantastic achievements, it could be a huge weekend for the Red Rose. Eddie Jones and his England side, Dave Christian, is here to talk rugby.
Manx Radio Sport.
Now, before we talk about that elephant in the room, there was a match last night in the Manx Cup, Dave, and you were there at a very soggy Ballafletcher. It finished 26-7 to Vagabonds against Southern Nomads in that Manx Cup match.
Indeed it did, Chris, and it was terrible. The weather had just about held out until about 10 minutes before kickoff, and then the swirling, driving rain started to come in from the southwest, and Ballafletcher was a pretty miserable place to be. Both sides struggled early on in the match with handling. The ball was like the proverbial bar of soap, but it was Vagabonds who they were playing with the wind behind them in the first half. They got a little bit of impetus through their forwards. They managed to grind out a penalty try just 8 minutes in. About 10 minutes later, they picked up a second try. That was a pushover try with the front row and the pack all involved in that, with James Clark getting the touchdown. Still the Nomads, though, they weren't there to make up the numbers. They hit back, still playing into the wind. Farouk Davies playing, normally at St George's in football, a Thursday night game. Farouk had a little trot out, and it was very, very surreal. I'm stood there in the balcony trying to get what shelter I could from the rain, and Farouk picks up the ball. He's about 55 metres out from the line, and one of the Nomads players just shouted, "Score it, Farouk." And I heard a snort of derision from behind me in the Vagabonds crowd. But he proceeded to do exactly that. He scored it. He weaved his way past 4 tackles, went in under the posts, converted try, and Nomads were back to within 7. Stayed like that till half time. Early on in the second half, Nomads had an opportunity for a penalty kick straight in front of the post. Turned it down for some strange reason. That would have narrowed the score even further. And the soggy second half remained pretty much scoreless all the way through. And the last 10 minutes, Vagabonds' forward pressure just gradually told, and picked up 2 late scores. Tom Gascoigne with 1, Rob Martin with the other. All 4 tries through the forwards. Johnny Beckley with a couple of conversions in there. It doesn't really affect the Manx Cup standings at the moment. We're playing on a league basis with the top 2 sides going forward to play in the Cup final. Ramsey is still top, but only by virtue of playing more games. Vagabonds and Douglas Celts have only played once each. Those 2 will be meeting each other, I think, in the next round of matches. And unfortunately, the memory lets me down when I go to say when those games are, but I think Douglas and Vagabonds pretty much looking like the form teams right now, but we'll have to wait and see what the rest of the competition brings.
No other men's matches in the domestic setup tomorrow, but there is one ladies match. You feel a bit for them on World Cup final day, but Vagabonds travel to Preston to play Grasshoppers in women's NC1 Northwest.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I arranged the travel for the clubs during the closed season, and when Vagabonds confirmed their fixture list and said we were playing on the 2nd of November, I thought, oh no. But they guaranteed there'll be a pitch available at Preston. It'll be playable as well because they have an all-weather surface there at Lightfoot Green. So no pitch worries. They'll be able to get up there nice and early. 11:30 kickoff. So if they hustle away from Liverpool Airport first thing, they should make Preston just in time for the World Cup final kickoff. They'll get to see the game before they go out onto the field. Uncharacteristically, Vagabonds have had a run of fixtures, consistent ones. So I think 4 weeks on the bounce. Now, unfortunately, they couldn't play last week because of a waterlogged pitch at Burnley. But 3 weekends out of 4, they've had matches, and normally they're interspersed at irregular intervals during the season. That's taken its toll a little bit. There's a few knocks there in the squad, the positional changes as well. So I think Preston not been going particularly brilliantly this season, but they're right next to Vagabonds in the table. So it's important for Vagas to pick up a win on the road. And I'm sure Corinne Daly, who's leading the team, will be focused very firmly on that, and because she's from Ireland, she won't be too bothered about the elephant in the room either.
Give us your evaluation then, Dave, of this huge match in Yokohama tomorrow, England against South Africa. Just give us your punditry, your expert preview analysis, if you will, of how the World Cup has gone for both sides and who you reckon will be lifting that trophy tomorrow.
Well, for students of English literature and Shakespeare in particular, this is almost like Brutus and Mark Antony. England are the Mark Antony. They're expressive, powerful, move around the pitch, score tries. Whereas South Africa are very much, I'm not going to say plodders, that's unfair to them, but they're a little bit more conservative in their outlook and don't quite excite the audience in the same way. And that's the sort of two contrasts we have. And it's similar to the 91 World Cup when England went in with all guns ablazing, throwing the ball wide with gay abandon. And then they got to the final and tried to play a conservative game against Australia and got beaten in their own backyard. So it's important for England to maintain pace and tempo. South Africa have only really got one game to offer that. Ultra-conservative, big arm wrestle, big forwards, keeping the ball nice and tight and kicking for territory. And I think it would be a mistake for them to try and change their game plan. It's worked so far. Stick with what works and try and drag England down to their level. The build-up to the competition, South Africa lost in that opening game to New Zealand. That meant they didn't meet New Zealand to the final, so they were quite happy with that, that opening defeat. And England's have had a pretty much flawless run in. They missed that one game that was called off when the Typhoon Hagibis came through, but that disrupted the setup for them. But they just got on with it, and they came out with that blistering performance against the All Blacks last Saturday, and everyone sort of took up and sat up and took notice of that. And said, right, if they can do that to the All Blacks, you're going to really have to watch out for them. And there's new stars in the making. There's been lots of people arguing about how many of the current players would get into the 2003 World Cup winning side. It's a difficult contrast to draw. It's comparing apples and oranges. In 2003, those guys had come through the back end of, some of them had come through the back end of amateur rugby when they were having to work for a living as well as fit in their training commitments. These guys now have known nothing else but full-time professionalism, and they're going to be a little bit fitter, a little bit stronger and a little bit quicker than the team from 2003, I think. I think rugby's moved on a little bit from that.
Well, Dave Christian, thank you very much. You'll be glued to the telly, no doubt. It is a monumental day tomorrow. England against South Africa in that World Cup final. Eddie Jones's side produced a dominant display to see off reigning champions New Zealand in their semi-final, with the Springboks defeating Wales last Sunday. The Red Rose have only won the trophy once, thanks to that last-gasp drop goal from Johnny Wilkinson in 2003. While South Africa, they're chasing their third crown. To play us out this evening, Rugby Development Officer on the island, Chris Brannigan, says a win for England would provide a huge boost to the local game. Good evening.
Wales getting to the semi has been real important. England reaching here has been real important. I was at a local club last Sunday, and as I was arriving, so was a little girl whose mum had brought her down and asked if she could join the club because she'd been watching rugby the day before. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing a grassroots impact of the home nations doing pretty well.
And that's brilliant, isn't it, when you see such a terrific performance from any side who you may be aligned to or have loyalties to. It inspires the younger people who may be watching the event for the first time to take up the sport.
Yeah, especially when England play the way they did, and it was exciting last week. I think it's a game you could watch, and perhaps the Wales-South Africa game was a bit more for the purists, but England certainly played inspiring rugby. And the World Cup's been really well branded, and the rugby's been free-flowing. Watching teams play like Fiji, teams like Japan doing so well. The rugby they're playing is exciting rugby. So, yeah, it's ones that football fans can sort of appreciate, I guess, or other sports fans can think, actually, that's pretty fun.
Dawson goes through, makes a wonderful break. He's tackled 15 metres from the line. Back's there. Wilkinson will drop for goal. There's offside, surely, against England. No, Martin Johnson has it. He drives. There's 35 seconds to go. This is the one. It's coming back for Johnny Wilkinson. He drops for World Cup glory.
Yes!
It's up. It's over. He's done it. Johnny Wilkinson is England's hero yet again. And there's no time for Australia to come back. England have just won the World Cup.
There will be those who don't like rugby, There will be those who like rugby but don't necessarily like England. That's quite common, I've found. And I fully realise that we're on the Isle of Man. We're not England. But do you think if it is Owen Farrell who lifts the Webb Ellis Cup on Saturday, it will have more of a positive impact on the local sport over here than if the Springboks won?
Undoubtedly, yeah.
What would it do for Manx rugby?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because obviously we've got a mix of the home nations over here, and we've also got a strong mix of South Africans over here too. But the investment England rugby make into the island already gives that strong partnership and strong link. So the investment in terms of club competitions, so our senior teams and our junior teams affiliate into English league structures and English competition structures. So we've got sort of a link directly with England already. Seeing a home nation win, I think if it had been Wales, it still would have had a massive impact on the Isle of Man. A home nation winning the World Cup final will just be in itself a big recruiter. I think it'll get not just players into the game, hopefully it'll re-inspire some people to come back into the game. So whether they're former players or maybe just guys and ladies to come down and watch on a Saturday.
And a lot of people saying that England actually begin the final as favourites. That performance against New Zealand was absolutely sensational. But where do you think, Chris, the game will be won and lost?
It's going to be tight. I don't know if England would want the favourites tag. I think they'd be preferred the underdog tag, but they definitely are going to be favourites. Yeah, I think it's going to be the goal kicking is going to be quite important. Andre Pollard's got pretty poor, I want to say, like 57-58% conversion accuracy. He's got a lesser penalty accuracy than Farrell or Ford. So in a tight World Cup game, kicking those 3 points could be important, or those 2 point extras. So yeah, those, I think there's going to be a couple of key battles around the park. The front row will be quite a challenge for England. Sinclair's done quite well recently, but I think he'll be tested tomorrow. Itoje is going to have his best game ever after having his best game ever last week. He's going to have to do better, because Etzebeth's 6'8" of pure machine. So Itoje is going to have to deal with him. So I think there's going to be a few key personal battles on the field. But the kicking will be important.
South Africa once again in front of President Mbeki on the brink of history. They're about to become world champions. And just as England did 4 years ago, right on the stroke of full time, they kick it into touch. And John Smith and his team are the winners here in the Stade de France. South Africa are the champions. It doesn't really matter about the score. They've created their own bit of history, and the whole of South Africa will be delighted.
And it is a rerun of that 2007 final. I mean, this is a completely different squad, but do you think that makes any difference to the way that England approached this match?
No, I don't think so. I think Eddie Jones is his own man. Brian Ashton was his own man in 2007. England 2019 or England 2019. I don't think they'll be thinking too much of 2007 even. Nor will South Africa. I think it'll just be its own entity tomorrow.
It is odd, isn't it? You look at patterns, and with sport, often you look at the teams and the two teams going out and how you prepare and how you perform on the day. But there is still a lot of emphasis which is placed on superstition and the fact that South Africa have won World Cups in 1995. 12 years later, they won it in 2007. It's 12 years later now. Will that have any impact on things? It shouldn't do, but you never know, and people will place some importance on these weird trends. This England squad as a whole have been terrific. There were so many shining lights in that semi-final. You mentioned a couple of the players there. Kyle Sinclair, Mauro Itoje, Tom Curry and Sam Underhill as well. Fantastic performances from them 7 days ago. Have there been any players that have really stood out for you this tournament, or any surprises, players who you didn't feel had that calibre of performance in them?
Someone who I think has probably surprised a lot of people hasn't really surprised me, I'll be quite honest, but I think a lot of people would be surprised with George Ford. He showed the level of his leadership is second to none. He and Farrell were top tacklers last... Well, Ford was top tackler last week. Farrell was second most tackles, so, and they're playing 10 and 12. So that shows you how they were targeting that area. Somewhere South Africa will target in the final as well. Ford, yeah, he's controlled the game. He's kicked really well. He's been benched strategically and not moaned and been, you know, been the key driver in that team. So, yeah, George Ford, is, I'm very pleased to see he's probably silencing a few Cipriani fans out there. Who else has done well? Sinclair, probably, yeah. He's probably done a little bit better than I thought he may do. I thought he may lose his head a couple of times. Yeah, so I think Sinclair and Ford for me, but they've been key all over the park, haven't they?